If you're starting a business, forming an LLC, or getting a trademark, LegalZoom provides the personal attention you need to help you take care of all the details. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Enter discount code Harvard for more savings at LegalZoom. Welcome to the HBR IdeaCast from Harvard Business Review. I'm Sarah Green. I'm talking today with Erin Meyer, an affiliate professor of organizational management at INSEAD. She's the author of the book, The Culture Map, and of the HBR article, Navigating the Cultural Minefield. Erin, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Sarah.
So let's just start by, you know, tell us what the culture map is and tell us a little bit about kind of why you developed it. You know, what's the problem you're trying to solve?
I became very interested in researching how cultural differences were impacting business people because I found that although the world has changed quite dramatically over the last 15 years, the discourse around management hasn't kept up with it. So just to give you an example of this, I was just in a bookstore yesterday and I picked up a book about negotiations, a new book written by an American author, and as I'm looking through it, I can tell that the implicit assumption by the author is that the people who are negotiating, who are reading the book, are going to be negotiating with people who come from their own culture. But this isn't the case anymore. I mean, every year we're working more and more with people all over the world. So the question I think that every leader needs to ask himself is, do I have the skills necessary to lead in a global economy? Do I know how to adapt my motivational style to motivate my Chinese employees differently than I would motivate my employees from Brazil? And do I know how to negotiate a deal differently when I'm negotiating with suppliers in India? And do I understand how to do that differently to get the best deal when I'm negotiating with people in Sweden? And that's what I've tried to do in my book is to provide, in the culture map, is to provide a system that helps people to decode how culture is impacting their day-to-day work and then provide strategies for helping them to improve their effectiveness when working in this very complex multicultural world that we are now working in.
And so you have actually taken a number of different kind of criteria and mapped them out all along a sort of spectrum. And then you can kind of plot different countries on the spectrum. And what I found interesting about this approach was that, but you go beyond sort of just communication to talk about specific activities like evaluating performance and disagreement and persuasion and how these things work differently in different cultures. Why did you think it was so important to get that level of specificity in there?
Well, I wanted to be really specific because I think that if you just give people a concept and they don't understand how to apply it, that the information is interesting but perhaps not so useful. So I wanted to be specific. I wanted the scale to help people to really pinpoint what it is that they can do differently in their day-to-day work in order to be more effective. In addition, I also found that people have a tendency to typecast cultures on just one or two scales, and then that leads them into traps. So, for example, well, let's say you have an American who's working with a French person, and he might think, okay, well, I know the French are really implicit. So that would lead him to then assume that the French are also less direct with negative feedback, which is not the case. In French culture, they're more implicit communicators than Americans are, but they're also much more direct with negative feedback than Americans are. And this can cause a problem if you don't understand these discrepancies, because you might have a French employee who's working for an American and who then misunderstands the American's tendency to give three positives with every negative as an actual compliment, meaning that the American might think he's given poor feedback, and the French person might leave that same meeting thinking that he's just received good feedback. So in any case, the culture map allows you to pinpoint how cultures change from one scale to another and see both the similarities and differences in a concrete way.
And it's interesting because You know, throughout the piece, you have these kinds of reminders about this is all relative. And depending on where you are on the scale, you know, certain practices may look differently to you. Because I think, to your point about globalization, we're not just going across two cultures. We're often moving across or between three or four cultures or even more. So can you just spend a little bit more time talking a little bit about what that looks like in practice when you've got, you know, Brazilian and an Indian and American all in a room, how that kind of relativity plays out?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just give you an example. So this is actually an example from the book, but I think it's one that people experience all of the time. I was working a little while ago with a global team, and at the beginning on the team, I had both Americans and French people that were working together. And I asked the Americans, you know, what's it like to work with the French? And they gave me an answer I had heard many times. They said, well, Erin, you know the French. They said, you know, the French, they're always late, they're really chaotic, they're really disorganized, they're always changing the topic in the middle of the meeting, which makes it very difficult to follow them. And they were frustrated with their perception of what it was like working with the French. But then a little bit later, I had a group from India that joined the same team. And after they had been working together for a while, I asked the Indians, what's it like to work with the French? And the Indian said to me, well, Erin, you know the French. They said, you know, they're so rigid. They're so inflexible. They're so focused on the structure and punctuality of things that they're unable to adapt as things change around them. And, you know, if you don't tell them weeks in advance exactly what's going to happen in the meeting, in what order, it makes them very nervous, right? So here we have this American and Indian culture that are having two totally opposite impressions of the French culture. And you can see that if you look at the culture map tool that I work with, you can see on what I call the scheduling scale, which is a scale that looks at time orientation. You can see that the French culture falls somewhere in the middle on a world scale, but it falls halfway between where the U.S. would fall and where India falls, which leads to this opposite perception on the same culture. And this type of relativity, I mean, this, I experience this every day in my work. And I was working with some Chinese a few days ago doing some interviews, and they were talking with me about how startling it was to them that the French were so egalitarian. One of them said, you know, it's amazing. The French really think that everybody is totally equal. And if you ask any British person who's been working in France, they'll tell you how extremely hierarchical they are. So this is really important. I think this relativity is really important for today because, you know, maybe 20 years ago, most of us who were working internationally, either we were business travelers or we were expatriates, and that meant that mostly you just had to understand what one other culture was like and how that culture compared to your own culture. But for leaders today who are working in multinational organizations, that is not enough. You have to understand now, you know, how each culture perceives one another so that you can better facilitate these sometimes very complicated interactions.
Well, and that, I think, seems to for me, raises a question about, you know, some of the cultures you've mentioned are closer together than I maybe would have assumed, and others seem further apart than I would have assumed. Did you run across pairings like that, that were either closer than you would assume or further apart than you would have assumed?
Well, often cultural pairings don't line up with our stereotypes. So I'll just give you two examples of that. I mean, one is that in the West, we have a tendency to think that all Asian countries are more or less the same. So we might talk about Japanese culture and Chinese culture thinking, well, geez, those cultures are, you know, 90% alike. And you really couldn't be further from the truth. On the 8-scale culture map that I work with, it is true that 6 of the scales, China and Japan, fall relatively similar to one another, although the difference between them is still noticeable. But then there's 2 scales where those two cultures fall on opposite ends. And one of them is the scheduling scale, where we look at time orientation, where the Japanese are very linear time, which means that they're very focused on punctuality and structure and organization, being organized. And the Chinese are highly flexible time, which means they're very focused on reactivity and changing things as you go. And adaptability is more important than flexibility. So there's that one big gap. And then there's another big gap on the map that looks at how decisions are made differently from one culture to another. And the Japanese are perhaps the most consensual society in the world, meaning that decisions are made in groups by consensus, bottom up. And the Chinese culture is a highly top-down society, which means decisions are made by the boss in a top-down manner. So if you're managing both Japanese and Chinese, you need to understand these differences. Thinking that they're the same is just going to end up getting you in trouble. And then a second pairing that I think is perhaps interesting is that we do have some research that indicates that the most difficult cultural move is not, let's say, I don't know, Americans moving to China, as you might think, but is actually Americans moving to the UK. So we've seen that Americans moving to the UK have a higher expatriate failure rate than Americans moving to Asia. And that arises because of something that I call cultural dissonance, which means that when you're working with another culture that speaks another language, where people have a different physical appearance, they eat different kinds of food, when culture is really obvious to you, so meaning that you recognize that the culture is different. So if you have an American moving to China, he thinks, wow, you know, Chinese culture is going to be so different from my own, so I really have to be ready to be flexible. But when you have two cultures where people speak the same language and physically don't look very different, people underestimate the difficulty, and then they're less flexible, which often leads them to get frustrated more easily. And, you know, Americans moving to the UK is a classic example of that, where the American moves to London thinking, well, you know, mostly I'm just focused on my strategy. And then after a while, when cultural issues start to arise, he thinks, you know, these British are incompetent, instead of thinking there's something cultural that I need to understand here. So that's only important that when you're looking at the framework, at the culture map, that you recognize that small gaps matter. You don't have to be moving from the left side to the right side. You might just be moving a little bit of a nudge to the right or a little bit of a nudge to the left, and it's still impacting you.
Well, and it's interesting that you mention these different examples, because I think, you know, a lot of the business and managerial advice I have read over the years is sort of giving etiquette rules that you are supposed to memorize. But what I'm getting from you is that this is way too complicated to try to just memorize some rules. So what are some things people could do, you know, in the absence of having kind of a guidebook to inhale?
Well, I do think, just to mention that, I think that often people worry a lot about etiquette. When they travel to another country, they worry about, you know, how am I going to shake hands, or, you know, what are people expecting me to wear? And, you know, I found with these superficial elements that today with globalization, most managers are pretty accepting of cultural differences. I mean, you're working with someone from another culture and they, I don't know, give business cards in a way that's different than you would in your country, or they don't shake hands the way you would in your country. We forgive each other. There's no big deal. We just recognize, oh, okay, we're culturally different. But when it comes to these deeper issues, like what leads us to feel trust for somebody, or what leads us to feel persuaded by an issue, and those are the things that are really impacting our international business today. So I think the best thing that a manager can do is to show a lot of humility, a lot of curiosity, and to recognize that this is an ongoing learning process, that we never become experts on it, but that the more that you learn to decode these differences, the more successful you can be.
Erin, thanks again so much for chatting with us today.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Erin Meyer of INSEAD. Her book is The Culture Map, and her HBR article is Navigating the Cultural Minefield. For more, including Erin's blog posts, visit hbr.org. brought to you by LegalZoom.